This meeting is now being recorded.
All right. Well, welcome to the October 26th meeting of the Judicial Branch Budget Committee. I'm David Rubin. I'm the chair of the committee. I'm a judge here in San Diego County. So let me start off by welcoming everybody to San Diego County, and you are welcome guests of our court. And I think as you wander around this building, you'll see why it was so important that the new building be built. And for those of you who can stomach it, I'll take you on another tour of this building that will demonstrate to you how important it is that human beings no longer come in this particular facade. All right. So thank you. And also want to thank at the outset this committee for its very hard work. The subcommittees have been doing an amazing job, and I think that we've gone a very long way in a very short time, very efficiently, which is probably appropriate for a budget committee. So good job to everybody. So let's start then by having Ms. Fogarty take roll.
Good morning, everybody. Judge Rubin?
Here.
Justice Hume?
Here.
Judge Anderson?
Here.
Judge Barton?
Here.
Judge Brody, I believe, is going to be here shortly.
Judge Brody is en route. He should be in 10 minutes.
Okay. Judge Nadler? Judge Nadler, are you on the phone? Judge Stout?
Here.
Ms. Flenner?
Here.
And Ms. Ibarra?
Here.
We also have Jody Patel, Chief of Staff from the Judicial Council, Millicent Sidwell, Chief Operating Officer from the Judicial Council, and Zlatko Theodorovic, Director of Finance. Okay. So I want to remind everybody that this meeting is open to the public and is being recorded. Members of the public can join the call via listen-only code, permitting them to join and leave at any time without notice or interruption. Judge Rubin, I think, is next to move on to the next page.
Okay, so first of all, did everybody have a chance to review the minutes of our September 28th meeting? Everyone's sort of nodding vaguely at me. I know it's after lunch. I'll keep it moving. All right. Do we have a motion for approval of the meetings?
So moved.
Thank you. And we have so Barton moves. Anderson seconds. Is there any discussion about those minutes? All right. If not, let me take a vote. All those in favor of approving those minutes, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Nays? Abstentions? Passes unanimously. Thank you. Ms. Fogarty, was any public comment written public comment received?
We had no written public comment and no in-person heads today to make comment either.
Okay. This concludes, therefore, the public comment portion of the meeting. Let's move on now to our discussion and action items. We have one that we'll be doing in an open session. I'm going to turn this over now to Justice Humes. Justice Humes, head of the subcommittee, to help us craft an annual budget change proposal process. To remind anyone listening, it is too late for us to participate in this round, and this round of budget change proposal, so we're clear, goes to budget year 17-18. What Justice Humes will now be discussing with us with the subcommittee, the budget change proposal process that goes into effect for budget year starting 18-19. No, wrong, I'm off a year. But what year's that? We're 16. 18. No?
Yes, 18-19.
That's right. 18-19. I'm right.
Oh, you're right.
The BCPs for 17-18 have already been submitted to the Department of Finance.
Thank you. Right. So that would be right. They'd be already done. So it would be hard for us to participate.
You're absolutely right, Joe.
Justice Humes.
Okay, so has everybody had a chance to look at the material on the proposed schedule for the budget, the BCP process?
Yes, I think it's outstanding. I like how it's so precise and knowable.
So I don't know, maybe the way we should start is by asking if anybody has any questions about it first.
I don't have any questions, I have some thoughts.
All right.
I think that we can be confident that we should be handling the IFRs ourselves. The only change I would propose in paragraph one, if you will, or block one, would be have the sentence read that JVBC reviews the IFRs, and then skip down to which and recommends which IFR should be developed into budget change proposals, omitting the reference to the chief. That'd be one proposal for that first block.
That seems like it makes sense to me. That to me is a proposal that we just take more, we just do more work on the front end, really, to get these things pulled together and to kind of put them together and start the process by doing that. So I think that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, and I think also as we talk about this, I think we want to, I mean, I should ask Justice Humes if he feels this way, but my sense of it would be that there would be a, for people who fall out of the IFR process, like if we decide, there's still going to be an open dialogue. I expect them to pick up a phone and call us or call Judge Anderson or somebody and say, hey, what happened? Or I'd like to be reheard on this, and that we would be flexible enough to at least give them some kind of ear, whether or not it goes further would be up to the committee. But does anybody disagree with that part of the process? I mean, we do want to encourage people to participate in this and take their fate in their hands.
I mean, we've talked about the whole notion with these IFRs and the BCPs about the balance that we're going to have to be trying to achieve, and the balance is encouraging people to be creative and innovative in submitting BCPs. We don't want to stifle any kind of initiative on people's parts, but at the same time, on the other hand, we want to be realistic about the BCPs and the IFRs that we're going to go forward with, because there's a limited ability to do everything. So we can't do everything, so we want to encourage people, but at the same time, we don't want to over-encourage people and send out false expectations that that more than we're going to be able to approve are actually going to be able to approve. So.
Right. I mean, I think this committee is going to have some hard work, just difficult discussions with.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, I think that's why we're here.
And just so I'm clear, are you taking the language that says working with the Chief Justice out and then leaving the rest of the sentence intact?
No.
Or do you take the Chief out the second reference as well?
Correct. So it'll just go, the JVBC reviews the IFRs and determines which IFR should be developed. I guess we're putting the words and determines which IFR should be developed into budget change proposals or BCP concepts as necessary for further advisory committee consideration. And I think we're anticipating a feedback loop with the bodies that are proposing them.
And I also think to the extent the chief ever wanted to get involved, she certainly would be welcome to do so.
Yeah, well,
she
clearly.
Chief, so.
She is the Chief Justice. And I think part of my recommendations will be that what you just said, sort of start deleting references to her because she can participate where and if she wants to, and rather than making that a rule that she has to participate. I think there'll be years where she'll turn it over to us completely and years where she'll want to have more active involvement.
And I would think that she may want to have more active involvement on particular IFRs or BCPs, but maybe not others. So, I mean, I think we should leave it up to her to get involved when she wants to be involved.
I agree. So I was... Then, moving then down to block three, I would say the JVBC reviews unsuccessful BCPs from the prior fiscal year and determines which old BCPs should be included.
It's Gary Nadler here.
Hey, Gary. And determines which old BCPs should be included as part of the new budget year package. Or not determines, maybe, yeah. Or
suggests
mm-hmm. is a better word.
Or did we say the same thing up earlier in that change that you made, JVBC reviews IFRs and determines which one should be developed? That we can ask.
I think on that one, we just make the call. I just think it'll be too...
Yes.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think what...
I'd say recommend.
Where? Oh, yeah, maybe recommend. Well, no, I think suggest. Because this all goes to the council in the end.
I think suggest.
And they make the decision.
That's a suggestion. I'd use the word suggest in item 3 because it's going to the council.
Yeah, this all goes to the council. I mean, once we get past the IFR process, this is all winding up on the council's lap, so I don't want to preempt or take their prerogative or its prerogative. And then still in that same block, the JDBC will organize all BCPs for submission. I guess.
Will we be doing the prioritization?
Yes, I think we will be doing some prioritization. Yeah. Does anybody else have better language? Better language, anybody?
Prioritize?
Is that a word?
Or, you know.
JDBC will organize and prioritize all BCPs for
further processing.
There you go. Perfect. Can you say it again, Kim? Or Ms. Flanner?
The JDBC will organize and prioritize all BCPs for
further processing.
For further processing. In block 4, we can just strike the word the Chief Justice and put in these preliminary priorities.
Preliminary priorities.
Why don't we just strike the whole first sentence?
And then we put the understanding of course the Chief.
That's right. Just strike the whole first sentence. Block 4. And then the rest remains as is. Mr. Hume, or Justice Hume, you're kind of an expert in this area. You were in the governor's office. Does this... Tell us how this will work and how you, if this is.
Well, I know how this works, and I think Slotkin knows how this works, and he probably knows how it works better than I do. But what I would say is that, you know, getting back to my original point about trying to encourage people to submit good, thoughtful BCPs, on one hand, but also realizing that there are limited budgetary funds and there's a limited likelihood that a lot of BCPs are going to be granted. So, you know, I think one of our tasks is going to be to figure out early on in the process and as the process goes through where we want to kind of focus our efforts. Because I think what is a mistake is for us as a branch to spend an inordinate amount of effort and staff time and staff effort and staff work developing either, you know, BCPs that aren't going to go anywhere. And I don't know if you have any thoughts on that, but my I just want to say one other thing in doing this is that usually what happens is that there is a list of BCPs that were submitted 1 year and only some of them were approved. So that means that when you start the next year in the BCP process, you already have, you know, 15 or 10 or a dozen BCPs that were not approved and that you thought were important last year. So there's a good chance that you're going to continue to think that a lot of those are pretty important. And I think people should consider whether or not the new BCPs that are being developed are better and more important than the ones that have already been rejected that we're going to probably likely resubmit. So it's just kind of filling in this element of realistic practicality in this whole BCP process.
And for people listening, Zlatko was in the Department of Finance for years and is also kind of an expert in this area. Can everybody hear
you? Yeah, no, I appreciate that. I think when we first had this conversation about BCPs, I made a comment about how we let almost any request go through. And I think that the challenge will be is determining which ones are worthy of that, you know, dialogue with the administration about what are our real priorities. When we get to too many BCPs, then what are viewed as their highest priorities become a bit diminished when the volume is so loud on all of the BCPs and there's only limited staff time to really focus, and we want them to focus on those highest priorities for us. I mean, I know internally there's a value to recognizing need, and there's times in department land, I know as Jody can attest, that they would submit them just to say that they did. But I think as a branch, we have to, I think, take a slightly different tack, and we should be aware of what it means to engage the administration in a negotiation and advocacy for branch priorities and sort of balance the bits and pieces workload type BCPs that maybe other departments might have submitted that I think we really aren't in the same place that they are on.
I guess I have a question for either Justice Hughes or for Zlatko. when a budgeting entity comes either to Department of Finance or the governor's office and says, these are our priorities, to what extent is that important to the listener? To what extent is that like just a starting point? I mean, how does that play?
If there are 20 priorities, it doesn't mean a lot. Mm-hmm. If there are 5 or 6 priorities, it means a lot.
Also, you know, it's good to think about it. Luckily, you can talk about this more than I can, but the way that California budgeting works, we are not zero-based budgeting. Zero-based budgeting is when you, every year you create a budget, you consider priorities and you decide whether or not you want to fund certain priorities and not other priorities. That's not the way it works. We are an incrementally based budget, meaning that, for the most part, what was budgeted before is going to get is going to be budgeted again.
Correct.
And there's going to be very little changes on the margins about that. And so if there's not a lot of money coming in because of new taxes, and or if there's less money coming in because of a recession or whatever, then that's going to affect the BCPs because you're already starting off asking for basically more than what you got before just by submitting the BCP. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So it's an uphill battle.
Yep.
I mean, there have been years, and Blacko knows this, where finance will come out and say, we are not going to consider BCPs.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just like, well, okay, then what are we doing? Because they're just not going to because they've got so many budgetary holes to fill that there's no possibility of finding new money for new BCPs.
And that was the case for several years during this last recession, right? I think 2-3 years in a row, DOF said no BCPs. You know, it didn't matter what the need was.
It was reductions.
And people still submitted them, and agencies still submitted them, and they should. I mean, if you've got a critical need, even in a recessionary time, even if there's no money, you know, I think it's our obligation to the people to still submit the BCP and say, we recognize the need and we need to do this.
Yeah.
But our expectations should just be kind of in accordance with the reality.
Absolutely.
Yes, and I've done a few presentations over the last few weeks in which I've given a budget update, and I've talked about where the revenues are currently, and those kinds of things I think are important for us to understand about our advocacy is where are we in a budgetary process and revenue, and what the governor's been identifying sort of as his priorities. And that's why I think in our training, to read the governor's A pages, the budget summary, the message about what are the long-term priorities of the administration, and how do we fit within those? Because that's as clear a statement of his priorities as we can get. He puts publicly on paper, and that's what the budget's based on. And so,
and that in the past has determined that, since the number of BCPs stemming from this branch, the revenue picture. I mean, when you're on a declining mode, I don't know that we want to be submitting 20 BCPs.
Can I just ask a technical question about the meeting? I understood that the call-in folks, we wouldn't hear if they called in or not. Is that correct?
Correct.
So someone just joined the call or just joined the meeting. Who is that?
Or he's left.
Uh-huh. It'll beep when somebody hangs up as well.
Oh. Paranoid. All right. I have a question then to also to Justice Hughes and Zablocko about
Can I ask one? This is Nadler here. Is there any way to turn up the receiver?
Yeah.
Or is this as good as it gets? I'm sorry to interrupt.
That'll just turn up the volume.
That just turns up the volume.
Sorry.
So can people pull the microphones closer to them when they're talking?
Sure.
Great. Does this
Thank
help?
You. Thank you very much. It does. Thank you.
I guess my question then is one about advocacy, kind of more of a multi-year advocacy approach. To the extent that we submit BCPs, and it sounds like each year we have to kind of decide what our sweet spot's going to be in terms of how many, you know, we want to go in with. But to the extent that we don't get something, do those BCPs become useful to the governor's office or to DOF in terms of creating the next year's budget? Like, oh, you know, we didn't think about that. Maybe we should. Do they use it that way or no? Not so much.
Yeah, absolutely. I would.
Yes.
I mean, in terms of the governor's budget, the secret in this whole budgetary process, the biggest secret, is to get into the A pages, which is the part of the budget that the governor proposed in January. And the secret to getting into the A pages is getting into what's called the white pages, pages go to the governor during November and December, and that's when the governor is sitting down with his staff and with the head of finance, with a few other people, going through every agency's budget, the judiciary's budget, university's budget, everyone's budget, and deciding what they can do, given the resources that they project to have. If what you want is not in those white pages, like the likely chance of being in the actual budget and the aid pages is nil, or not nil, but it's not very high, very low. So the secret is somehow, through finance or through the governor's office, or somehow getting them to understand what the priorities are before they sit down, or during the process of them sitting down and developing this budget in November of the year before the budget comes out in January. After the budget's come out, you know, yes, there's a process to change budgetary allocations, but it's a hard uphill battle, definitely.
And as far as your question about multi-year advocacy, I think you have to have some certain principles that you want to adhere to, because I think that those are easier for folks year over year to understand, but refine them as we get feedback on a particular position from the administration or where revenues are. So I think it's sort of, you're hoping that you're going down the same road, but are you in lanes 1, 2, or 3, depending on sort of what you're getting feedback from? Yes, they don't fund everything, but they'll tell you why they didn't fund something, and that can inform you whether or not it's a never again, they're never going to ever consider it, or it wasn't ready for them, and they just need to get more information, but they just weren't ready to put in the budget. So it's sort of adjusting our past is getting into those briefing binders, those 6 and 8 inch binders of briefing documents, is in part hearing what they feed back to us. Because if we keep knocking on the door in the same way every year, then we just become noise, and then they just don't hear us. So we also have to, I think, be sensitive to what is coming back to us from the governor's office and the administration and the Department of Finance.
And be sensitive, like you said, Blacko, to the information part of it, because what is going to matter is whether or not things are working, for example, like the innovative grants. What's going to matter is that was a governor's proposal. You know, it didn't come up. I don't think it came out of the BCP. I think it came out of the governor's proposal.
Right.
So that's one of those instances where getting information back to the governor's office and to finance on how this innovative grant program is working is going to be key if we want more money to do this, and if we think it's a success and we think we should get more money to do this. Otherwise, they won't know. So we got to get in there and tell them. So it's whether the information comes through a BCP or other channels, they need that information to develop the budget.
I think your point is, be it BCP or other channels. And that's where, you know, we know what we submit and how we advocate and what we put in sort of in meetings and in paper when we submit our budget needs. But they're out there visiting. They're out there hearing things from other folks. And so it's being sort of aware of that as well. And that's where Corey and I are doing our part to make sure that we're being plugged into what advocates are saying and what they're saying are their priorities. But they definitely are aware of what's going on in our system, even if we may not think it. And they can form their own opinions about what we're doing and how effective we are. And so while we can demonstrate what we think is the view that they should have, they develop their own independent views, and that's for good or for bad. And so I think we have to be prepared to be aware of the perception that they create, even if we don't have a hand in it directly, but because they read the newspapers. They get the news clips like we do, and they hear about an individual issue in a court, prone to being broadly generalizing about things, and we have to be careful about that. But you know, I think it is sensitivity to what they hear and see in the press, just like we do. And we cringe when we see a story. How they may react to that is something we also have to be aware of.
I have a question. Which administration is going to be making this decision, right? Because we're at the end of Brown. So
yeah, still Brown.
The budget that will be proposed this year will be his last budget.
Okay.
So the BCPs we do will not be considered by
Brown. It'll be
but
the next administration. Okay.
The extent to which we can use whatever channels we can to get into this budget.
One of the biggest things that occurs is a transition between administrations. And we talk about eight-inch binders. The Department of Finance prepares another set of transition binders. Each agency is putting transition binders together, demonstrating things that to the new administration about their challenges and issues. And so there is a lot of continuity because, like Justice Hume said, on the margin there's only fractions of percentages that really are changed, even with the new administration. But I think planting the seeds, because the Department of Finance staff, by and large, stay intact at the staff level and at the manager level. The director of finance may change. But guess what? The work that we've done for the analysts and the supervisors and some of those folks, they'll be the same ones carrying those messages forward to the next administration. So being sensitive to that, they can perpetuate, you know, bad ideas. They can also, you know, foster those things that were not heard by the prior director of finance that just was not willing to go forward. And we'd like to see them changed. And hopefully that they would carry those issues forward that were not so successful with the prior administration. So, yeah. And there's a number of those things. So.
One other point I'd like to make, if I could, I don't say too much, but I think that's really important in developing BCPs and pushing our fiscal agenda to be honest and not overreaching. Because the finance has talked to other people. We think that we're being cute by asking for the moon when we don't, or we think we're doing something smart by asking for $5 million when we only really want $2.5 million, we can only justify $2.5 million. It's not going to work. So, I mean, it just undercuts our case if we're not. We should be the one who they turn to if they want a credible and an informed answer to the questions they have, rather than just getting smoke blown out. They should be saying, well, how can you defend this when you're losing? We can defend that because this is what has to happen. I think way too often agencies and courts have gotten into the position of trying to shoot high to end up in shoot high, and they undercut themselves because they don't really have the facts and the information to defend for that.
Yeah, I have to. This is Nadler. Is there a tendency, if you were at Mr. Richester Humes and Slotko, if you ask for a certain amount because that's the amount that you need, is there a tendency to undercut that, to say, well, if they ask for $1 million, I'm sure they can do it for $600,000 or something like that?
Maybe. Yeah, I'm not going to deny that.
I mean, I'm wondering whether what you're saying is... Okay.
I mean, the fact is that they have limited... Usually they have limited resources, and so they may say, oh, you asked for $1 million? Well, and it's a well-defended, good proposal. We don't have $1 million to give you, but we're going to give you $800,000. So, I mean, I do think that there's that kind of thing goes on.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't mean that you should ask for $2 million. With the hope of getting $1 million. You can only defend $1 million next for $1 million.
No, because right. any increase will help. But it doesn't mean that that what you asked for initially wasn't justified. It's just that given the limited resources, we'll give you 75 cents on the dollar for a need, and we'll recognize that you won't be able to do everything that you said you would do if you got the whole dollar. And that's also part of a sort of resource allocation, is living with the knowledge, and that's part of our task, is to demonstrate what it means to get for the dollars that we ask for. And if they don't give it to us all, then what are the consequences? And that, I think, is when you talk about, you know, credibility and accountability in our request, is these are real, valid justification for what we're asking for. If you don't, these are real and valid consequences of not giving us the money.
This, by the way, happens more times than not. What happens is someone will ask for money and will say, you know, the earth is going to crash into the sun if we don't get this money. The money is not given, and the earth ends up not crashing into the sun. And then the agency or the department looks like they've just lost their credibility because they said, you know, a crisis was going to occur, no crisis occurred. So, you know, you got to be aware of that dynamic as you're going forward.
I would just say when that very first time I met Justice Humes, he was not Justice Humes, he was Mr. Humes, and I met others in the office there, and I was told the same thing, which was, do not exaggerate with us, tell us, because I was CJ president at the time, they're like, you tell us exactly how it is, because we find out it's otherwise, your word is shot in here. And so I adhere to that strictly, and I think that's worthwhile advice.
And the other thing is with the courts. I mean, if any agency or any branch or any entity ought to be honest, you know, and careful and thoughtful about what they're doing, it ought to be the courts.
I would say judges are more than anyone. Any more questions for Justice Humes or Zlatko? Okay.
Sorry. Is there anything we can be doing to strengthen our case or position ourselves for the transition? I mean, maybe no. Maybe the answer is no, because we're just a committee within the council, and there's nothing we should be doing to position ourselves so that when there's a transition, not only our programs that they like, our BCPs that they like, will get funded, but also the ones that we liked, that they didn't like, maybe we'll be listened to more carefully. Is there anything we can be doing as a committee to support that?
I don't know that it would be the committee initially. I think it would be the chief and Martin. And then, yes.
But this would dovetail into that.
Your committee would absolutely dovetail once.
Yeah, I mean, we burned, as an office staff person, many, many overtime hours doing the regular budget and being preparing programmatic evaluations of existing funding. So it wasn't just presenting, because they need to understand the whole 100%, knowing that they only really on the margin adjust, you know, a few percent of that. But having an understanding of base programs and what we spend our money on, I think, again, is what the chief and Martin would be thinking about and strategizing with you know, with all of this part of the process in the council.
Absolutely.
What is that message that's being brought to the next administration?
And the DOF staff typically stays intact. Maybe the top levels may switch out, but the staff pretty much stay intact. And so there would be briefings between with the new administration and the DOS staff, and they're going to be doing their own perspective, if you will, on our branch.
So we would hope that we'd have a collaboration where we could
absolutely
provide feed input to them on their...
Because we have constant communication with the DOS staff.
Any other questions for Justice Hughes or his team on the situation of Zlatko? All right.
On the whole process.
Oh,
wait. I'm not it off yet. I'm just struggling with, I have concerns that from 3 to 4, we may need to finish that sentence because it now reads the JBC will organize and prioritize all BCPs for further processing. Then the BCPs are presented to the Judicial Council. So what type of further processing are we referring to, or do we truly mean we're going to then present them? We'll prioritize, we'll organize and prioritize, and then present them.
I would expect that there's going to be cleanup that may have to be done on some of these BCPs. Like, once we kind of get figured out, like, this is what we want, they may come in with a certain dollar amount, we may be adjusting that. And I think that that's probably our last step before we go to step 4, but to me, what I liked about the language that was proposed was that it gives us an opportunity to do whatever else has to be done.
Yeah.
Would it be better than if it might answer your question rather than saying that JBBC will organize and prioritize BCPs for further processing? How about further review?
Further review is fine?
Yeah, it's really going to go to the council
right.
We'll finalize that.
I mean, correct.
Because it doesn't suggest
that
there's
a
process that's being missed.
Good point.
Yeah.
Good call, Ms. Flinner.
Yeah. And then I had one.
Wait, are you done?
I'm done.
Oh,
okay.
I think so.
All right, Judge Anderson.
Go ahead. No, I'm done.
Go ahead, Judge
Anderson. I'm jumping around on top of you.
No, you're good.
Okay,
under
item number two.
Yeah.
It's more semantics. It's more trying to create a sentence that lets the advisory bodies know that they're not an afterthought, but that they're forethought, and that it's not about exclusion. So a recommendation for language would be IFRs are developed into BCPs, and all applicable advisory bodies, as identified in the original IFR, are given the opportunity, as time permits, to provide input. Because the last thing you read is to provide input, so you feel like your input is wanted.
Sure,
I think if
sure
the
not.
Last thing is time permitting, it sounds, that's almost like somebody saying to you, if I got time for you, I'll listen to you.
You're right. Justice Simpson, is that all right?
I mean.
All right, so how did you say that?
Okay, rather than go to the front, let's start at the all applicable advisory bodies as identified in the original IFR are given the opportunity, as time permits, to provide input.
Actually, now that you've sort of flagged it, I don't love that. I mean, they are going to be given opportunities. The only reason they wouldn't be given opportunities is we're up against a deadline.
Correct, and you always will be?
Yeah. It's just depending on what their perception is of your language, by as your language and however it goes.
Yeah, right.
Is your language suggesting that they're an important part of the process, however we have time constraints, versus, yeah, we'll listen to you, but we may or may not have time for you.
Right. Well, yes, and because I think there may be times when we are in extremis and it's minutes or hours, not days or weeks. All right, perfect. I like that change. Judge Anderson, more maybe anything else?
I'm good so far.
All right.
I'm just thinking of different advisory bodies.
Ms. Flinner has one, I think.
I just have a question. This is not a revision to the process, but historically, on F,
where are you?
Initial funding request, section A, F at the bottom.
So oh, yeah, I see it, yes.
Provide a proposed lead advisory committee and why that committee should be designated as lead. Have all BCPs always been tied to a specific advisory body? And if not, why the change?
I think at this point, everything, even like judicial council ones have gone through the A&E.
Because that's where I was going. Mm-hmm. Yes, I know we submit them, so they all go through.
Typically, yeah. Even like the Waltham Gap one, you still have tick back.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think in our report, it'll say these are all the advisory bodies that have recommended. And if there isn't, then we'll have identified that. But I'm trying to think if we had any, we found a way to make sure.
But it wasn't a requirement before. It's just that's been past practice that we're just putting into.
I think we've been pretty good about making sure that somebody has cognizant of, even if it's a staff has developed it in some way, that it is vetted and explained to an advisory body in some form.
We also want to make sure we encompass all applicable advisory bodies because it could be problematic that you would look through one advisory body, but it might touch another's purview.
Yeah.
So we want that thoughtful process ahead to make sure everybody who should has an opportunity to provide input. Yeah.
And I think the good thing about having this committee is to be able to kind of augment that staff, what had previously been staff work, to make sure that that happens so that everyone's participating who needs to participate.
So actually that leads into my question, which was when it says number two, where it says IFRs are developed in CCPs and all applicable advisory bodies as identified in the original IFR.
Mm-hmm.
And then on your IFR, it says, we already talked about F, but E, required approvals, if you know. So when you say original IFR, you mean as budget, you folks and the budget staff have said, okay, well, you left this blank, so we're gonna add the required advisory bodies and so that they're going to get to play a role in the process.
Staff, will you mean?
Yes.
So yes, we will assist whoever is submitting the IFR to ensure that all advisory bodies are in the report.
Cool. Yes. And the nice thing about the committee is if we see something that hasn't been caught, we can add that too.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. Any further questions? Are you sure?
I'm putting my hand down.
Are you sure? Okay.
Thank you,
Jeff. Okay. Anybody? Motion, perhaps? A motion to approve as modified?
Right.
Okay, Anderson moves. Hume seconds. That's okay. Next time is tomorrow. All right, is there any discussion on this? Any further discussion?
It's a good discussion.
It was a great discussion leading up to it. All right, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? All abstentions. Passes unanimously. This is the language that will go to the council. Ladies and gentlemen, it does conclude the open portion of our meeting, and we are now going to go into our closed session. For those of you who did join by phone, we want to thank you for being here, though. We have no idea if there's anybody out there, but if you were there, we appreciate your showing the interest. And for those of you who are on the phone who are members, mainly Judge Nadler, we're going to ask you to hang up and call back in. All right, that concludes the open portion of the meeting.